The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai. Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Welcome back to the programme. Now, many of you will know Mike Mosley from his own work on television and stuff, but we were talking to him here on a number of occasions, but I mentioned the 5-2 diet beforehand. But he was writing this week, or it was being written about him, that when he was training to be a doctor, that, oh, you know, we're told saturated fat's terribly bad for you, very bad, clogged things, clogged that, clogged the other, dreadful if you've got a heart condition and all that kind of thing. Well, apparently he's done a U-turn on saturated fats and he is on the telephone line now. Michael Mosley, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. Good to hear you.
And you too. Now, when you were a student studying to be a doctor, a medical doctor even, I mean, people were really warned of fats.
They were. No, it was very, very clear in those days that fat obviously makes you fat and that fat is going to clog your arteries. You know, we all know that if you pour fat down a sink, it'll clog it up. So we've seen it as simple as that. That's what happened. Everybody knew it. That's what you were taught. End of story. But it's turned out to be much more complicated than that.
Yeah, it has indeed. But, I mean, there were lots of other things you were told. If you had cholesterol, be very careful with eggs.
Absolutely. That's a myth which has been going on for some time. I mean, really, it's been stamped on fairly firmly. There was a big study which came out in the British Medical Journal recently which showed that certainly eating up to 10 eggs a week had no discernible impact on your cholesterol levels or on your chance of having a heart attack or anything like that. So now the medical profession is actually recommending that people eat eggs, particularly for breakfast, because it keeps you full. Eggs are rich in protein, all sorts of vitamin and minerals. Eggs are now the good guy, if you like, having been for a long time the sort of thing you had to avoid.
Yeah, the thing about it is that, you know, you read about a new study and a new study and another study and research shows and all of that. And at one stage, butter was a mortal sin. Yeah. And everybody was supposed to eat margarine. Now you're going to the other way around.
Yes, but unfortunately, certainly the margarine that they used to make, they've got rid of many of the things in it now, but they used to produce something called trans fats. Because if you take liquid oil and turn it into margarine, you have to use a process called hydrogenation. And what that really means is you attach hydrogen bonds in it, and then it makes it into a solid at room temperature. But the byproduct of that were these things called trans fats, which are now known to be very bad for you. They're the sort of Lord Voldemort of the fat world, because the thing we know about fats now is that some fats are bad for you, some fats are neutral, and some fats are good for you. And so fat has gone from being something which is terrible to something which is actually quite complicated.
Yes. Now, you talked about various studies, and, you know, Americans eat a lot of fat. They have far more heart attacks than Japanese who eat very little fat. But you also refer to a British scientist called John Yudkin.
Yes, that's right. He was writing back in the 1950s and the early 60s. He wrote a book called Pure, White and Deadly, which was actually about sugar. And he pointed out that although there are countries like Japan where they don't eat a lot of fat, they also don't eat a lot of sugar, a lot of refined carbohydrates. And what he pointed out back then was there's actually a stronger association between heart disease and consumption of sugars and carbohydrates than between heart disease and fats. Mm. But his research was largely ignored, and he was pushed under the bus, as one of his colleagues put it. And what's happening now is that Yudkin's work is coming back into the vogue. That medicine is like anything else, it tends to move in fashions. So for a long time, the fashion has been that fat is the really bad thing. We must cut down fat. We must reduce our fat. Now, I think we're looking much more at the sugar in our diet and the realization that that's probably doing at least as much bad as the fat was.
Yeah.
It leaves you with a huge problem, though. What are you going to eat?
Well, it sure does. But you at one point said goodbye to beef. You only used skim milk, you avoided yogurt, you had low fat this and low fat that.
Yeah.
So one would have thought that was a healthy diet, but you say you put on weight doing that.
I did, unfortunately, and an awful lot of other people who went down the same road did as well. I've actually just made a two-part series on meat for the BBC series Horizon. And we look there at the basis of the sort of beliefs that, you know, meat is bad for you, that saturated fat from meat is bad for you. And really, it turns out to be very poor. That a lot of the studies which were done were... The problem was that what happens often is that people who eat beef also tended to smoke more and they tended to drink more. And it was probably the smoking which was the bad thing. It wasn't actually the beef. It was the associated habits, if you like, particularly in the States where, you know, if you're something of a redneck, you eat lots of beef, but you probably smoke a lot and you probably drink a hell of a lot. And it's probably the smoking and the drinking that's doing the bad stuff, not the beef at all. And indeed, the most recent studies suggest that being a sort of moderate meat eater is probably healthier for you than being a vegetarian, which will not go down well with vegetarians, I have to say.
No, but I'll tell you, you eventually come back in all these things to moderation, kind of, in all things. Don't be going out to... But I have to say that you did, in the course of what you were saying, cheer me up no end, because apparently eating a potato is not good for you, but if you eat it with butter, it's very good for you.
Yes. No, it turns out that if you eat a potato, and I've tried this out myself using a sort of kit, your blood sugar shoots up. But if you eat the potato with butter, the butter actually slows down the rate at which the sugar is absorbed from the potato, and that probably gives you less of a peak. Now, and there are lots of paradoxical things about diet, which is why I enjoy it so much, which is why I enjoy looking into it so much. But as you say, quite often it comes back to the sort of things your mother, your grandmother told you, that there are a lot of natural things. You know, things like dairy products, which have been demonized for a long time, and we now know that actually dairy is probably pretty good for you, that the sort of fats you find in milk and in butter are not the unhealthy fats after all, you know. And in yogurt, there was a study which came out recently which said that if you eat, you know, moderate amounts of full-fat yogurt, you're actually likely to lose weight, which is paradoxical. But it kind of makes you feel fuller and more satisfied. And the danger with all the low-fat products was that people just ate an awful lot more of them because fat actually kind of makes you full.
Yes, it is. It is extraordinary, and it also sounds kind of logical. But you say that you put on over 2 stone and you were still taking regular exercise.
Oh, I was. Unfortunately, exercise is not a great way of losing weight. I mean, it's good for other things. But yes, I put on 2 stone over the course of sort of 20 years, which doesn't sound much.
It doesn't,
but that's
no,
actually,
yeah.
That pushed me up to, I'm 5'11", that pushed me up to just close to 14 stone, about 190 pounds. And that's when I discovered that I was a diabetic. And that's what got me into intermittent fasting. And I made a horizon, and that led to the 5-2 diet. The idea that you should cut your calories 2 days a week. And so, and that has kind of reversed my diabetes, and I've shed those 2 stone. So I'm back now to my sort of sveltish-like 12 stone. And I'm much healthier for it.
Now, the other thing is we have an image, obviously, about Japan, and we also have an image about Mediterranean. And
yes,
you think the Mediterranean cooking, olive oil, terribly good for you, you know, but on the other hand, the French use an awful lot of butter and cream. But
yes,
but you reckon it is better for you than a low-fat diet?
Certainly, the studies are moving now towards... for a long time, we've been doctors have been pushing, you know, low-fat diets, but the trouble is they don't work, or they work in relatively few people. The people find them very difficult to stick to. And they don't actually seem to have the sort of benefits for the heart that you might expect. And the more recent studies have compared them with what's known as the Mediterranean diet. The Mediterranean diet has some wine in it. It has olive oil. It also has quite a lot of fish, nuts. Turns out that nuts are rather good for you.
Oh, yeah, they were banned too at one stage. If
absolutely,
you had cholesterol, yeah.
And of course, lots of kind of, you know, fresh vegetables and fruit and things like that. So, and a fair amount of exercise as well, because people, I don't know if the Mediterranean people are famous for it, but certainly there are these areas called blue zones, which are areas around the world where you get large numbers of people who live to the age of 100. And you find them in the Mediterranean, you obviously find them in Japan as well. And the thing they have in common is they do a fair amount of daily walking, but they also have this diet which tends to have kind of moderate levels of fat in it, but also a lot of vegetables in it.
So for, because there always are people listening who are crucified trying to lose weight.
Yes.
And there's an awful lot of talk in this country at the moment about obesity and the dangers of obesity and so on and so forth. And because of that, people are buying low fat this and low fat that. Though I have to say, I did notice that anytime I was in the States in a supermarket, the very, very large people very often had low fat stuff in their basket, which seemed which seemed odd, if you know what I mean.
It is, because unfortunately when you look at it, you realise it's full of all sorts of other junk, and it's not low calorie, but it tends to have quite a lot of sugar in it and other things added to it, which is why it doesn't kind of work. I have to say, you know, I am obviously a fan of the kind of the 5-2 approach. And there is a group in Ireland at the moment who are currently testing it on around 50 patients. So I think that hopefully this form of intermittent fasting, it doesn't work for everyone, but it works for quite a lot of people. And they find it an easier way of losing weight than, you know, just trying to resist eating 7 days a week.
Right. So, I mean, just in brief, you eat whatever you want, and then 2 days you extend.
Well, not whatever you want. You try and eat in moderation the other 5 days, but for 2 days a week, you cut down your calories to a quarter of the amount. I have a website called thefastdiet.co.uk, which also has all the sort of studies and information on the things we've been talking about if people want to find out more.
Okay.
And I will keep that sort of regularly updated, because I do find the science behind dieting absolutely fascinating, but also it moves, it changes quite a lot. So you have to kind of keep up to date with stuff. There's an awful lot of fallacies out there.
Yeah.
Things like, you know, you have to eat breakfast and things like that, where the studies really don't support that at all.
Oh my God, I thought that was another canon, that you absolutely had to eat a breakfast.
It is a canon, but it's not based on any decent research, because it turns out that we are all different and that some people actually don't feel like eating breakfast in the morning, and if you make them eat breakfast, they're more likely to put on weight. They did actually a study where they took a group of people, breakfast eaters, non-breakfast eaters, and they made them switch habits, if you like, so the non-breakfast eaters. And they found out that both groups did actually lose a little bit of weight, but it was exactly the same amount. So it was actually changing the habit that seemed to matter rather than actually doing anything about it. There really is no strong evidence, unless, you know, it's good. Children should eat breakfast, obviously, because it keeps concentration up. But if you're not the sort of person who likes eating breakfast, then eating breakfast is probably not for you. And breakfast just means breaking your fast. It doesn't mean 8 o'clock in the morning. It could be 11 o'clock in the morning. You know, it's kind of up to you. And again, the reason why the studies or people suggested that, you know, it's a really good thing to do is because people who regularly eat breakfast tend to be a bit slimmer. But the trouble is, again, that's because the people who skip breakfast also tend to have other attendant bad habits. They tend to be lying in, they tend to smoke more, they tend to drink more and things like that. So it's not the breakfast eating per se, but it's the habits that go with it that seem to lead to the bad stuff.
Okay, well, listen, thank you very much indeed for that. I have to say it cheered me up no end when I read the bit about the potatoes with the butter. But anyway, Mike Mosley, as always, thank you very much indeed for talking to us, and people can visit that website if they want. Now, Philip Nolan was in with us earlier on, and we just asked him to drop into the previous item about the travel insurance. But it was a health story that we had invited you in on, because you are actually nearly a sample of what...
Absolute proof of everything that Mike is saying is probably true, yeah.
What happened to you?
Well, in February, I too was diagnosed with diabetes, and I'm interested because he's 5'11", I'm 5'10", he was 14 stone, I was 16'3" at the start of the year.
Right.
Which, And we saw the longitudinal study on ageing here last week, and you know, something like 80% now of Irish people over 50 are either overweight or obese. And, you know, at the start of this year, I was one of them. My body mass index was 32.5. 30 is where you start being obese. So I was obese. And I actually decided, having watched Operation Transformation, to go and have my blood pressure. Yeah, because they were doing free blood pressure tests in shopping centres and stuff around the country. I didn't make that, but I went to my local supermarket one day and they have a pharmacy there and they were offering them. And my blood pressure was 164 over 100, and the 100 number is basically stage 2 hypertension. Now, as it happens, that was a complete blip. My blood pressure before that and ever since has been absolutely perfect. Right. But it did send me, like, racing to my GP, who, when he saw me, like most men, my kind of entry-level requirement for GP is that I've lost a limb, you know, I just don't go.
Yes.
And I actually haven't had bloods done, I'd say, since about 1998 or 1999. Men just don't do it. And that's one thing I would say, is get them tested. And when I went in, he said, right, I have you now. You were 50 last year and I want to check everything. And of course, the test came back and he said, I think you may be diabetic. And then a 3-month sugar test confirmed that I actually was. So I was told, basically, go on the diet and go on it straight away. And for once in my life, I actually did what I was told, because it's not my natural instinct. And I literally sat down and read everything I could find. And most of what I found is exactly what Mike is saying.
Really?
Is, you know, fat is not the enemy. I am now absolutely convinced that sugar is literally poison in your cupboard. Throw it out. Just don't use it.
Isn't it? But you know, you always heard this thing, you know, about butter was bad for you, butter is good for you. This one is bad for you, then it's good for you. And you just think, this is all blooming fashion. And
well, I don't understand how people think that, because, you know, you can actually physically see a cow eating grass. You see the milk come out of the cow. You see how the butter is made. And you think that that's less healthy than somebody in a laboratory combining chemicals to produce something yellow that you spread on your bread. Why would you think that the latter was more healthy for you than something that's produced absolutely naturally? I just don't understand that.
Right.
And equally, what I don't understand is, you know, this fascination, as Mike also said, of people, you know, buying low-fat foods. If they've extracted the fat, what have they put into it? Usually a lot of sugar and a lot of salt to give it back its taste. And so, you know, I just had, you know, not everybody who is overweight is going to get diabetes. There is a, you know, genetic predisposition to it.
Yeah.
And not everybody who gets diabetes, by definition, is fat either.
Yes.
You know, but your lifestyle will actually influence whether or not it develops. And mine
what
certainly
did. What did you do? I mean, how did you go about it?
About changing the diet?
Yeah.
I just immediately cut out all sugar, full stop. All added sugar, or free sugar, as it's called now. So no desserts, no cakes, no pastries, no jam, no anything. And that is not actually as difficult as it sounds, because if you eat fruit, while it is actually full of sugar, it's natural sugar. And you do have to be careful. You have to maintain a balance, obviously, between the amount of fruit you eat with vegetables and, you know, protein. I've learned, I think, over the past 4 months, I've lost 4 stone. So
In 4 months?
Yeah.
That's a lot of weight.
26 kilos, I think, is the, it's a lot of weight. And I, like, you know, ridiculous things. I've gone from a 17 collar to a 15. I was in a 42 trousers at the start of the year. I'm in a 34 today. I've no clothes that fit me anymore, which is a good problem.
Isn't that a wonderful problem? Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not going to be complacent about it either, because you could just as easily pile it all back on. I've never lost this much weight before, but I have lost weight.
And tell me, before you lost weight, Were you in any way self-conscious about size or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I would never take my shirt off at the beach or anything like that. You know, I just wouldn't do it.
Right.
And yes, you know, I have this thing, because I work for the Daily Mail and, you know, they often ask for photographs to go with features I write. Every photographer in the Daily Mail probably knows that I don't like being photographed except from chest up. I don't like the full-length ones and never have done. And,
right.
And now I don't mind, obviously, because I really, you know, I do look a lot trimmer.
And did you take a lot of exercise simultaneously?
No, I started to walk. And then, as I was saying to you earlier, I unfortunately had the umbilical hernia in Spain.
Oh, right.
And that put a stop to that for a month anyway.
Yeah.
But the one thing that really was good for me, I found, was I started having maybe 5 small meals a day. I didn't do Mike's 5x2, but I only eat now off tea plates. I know that might sound ridiculous, but a full plate is a full plate. And when your brain sees a full plate, I think it thinks it's going to be satiated.
Right.
So, you know, smaller meals more often. And, you know, again, funny things, you know, nuts are actually, the fat in nuts is very good for you. I'm now back eating nuts, which I always thought were bad for me. I eat avocado.
That was another one, yeah.
And also, you know, one thing I do as you get older as well, you do want to make sure that you occasionally have full fat dairy products. You want to make sure that you get as much calcium into you as possible. Excuse me. And none of those fats seemed to bother me. Also, what I found is that, like, the Mediterranean diet, yes, is very good. But one thing I found is Middle Eastern food, I found, is very good. Middle Eastern salads, hummus, you know, whole wheat flatbreads, yeah, rather than ordinary bread.
Falafel and
yeah. Yeah, I've cut out everything white. So I don't eat white bread, pasta, white rice, any of those things, yeah, white potatoes.
But I look at Italians and they live on white pasta and they're slim and svelte. They'd annoy you.
They do, but then that said and done, you know, there's also interesting research now on herbs and spices that actually can help regulate the release of sugar into the system.
Right.
And so I've started to eat a lot of turmeric. There's a lot of research that says cinnamon is actually very good. So what I do now, I never took sugar in coffee anyway, but in every cup of coffee I now take half a teaspoon of powdered cinnamon in there as well.
What's just that like?
It's fine, because, you know, you can get a cinnamon shot in coffee if you go to, like, you know, one of the trendy coffee shops or whatever, but it's all grand. Right. It leaves a little bit of a sludge at the end, and so you read your fortune in cinnamon. Yeah. But
one of the things that caught your attention, it seems to me, was that with this diabetes there was a threat of going blind.
Yeah, it really did. I mean, there are several complications that diabetes can lead to. It is probably the leading cause of lower leg amputation in the Western world now, because you get a thing called peripheral neuropathy, basically, and you lose nerve endings in your feet, especially. My feet seem to be fine at the moment. I have to get a full check on those. It also can lead to kidney failure, and most of all, it can lead to retinopathy, which is, you know, basically your eyesight deteriorates and you can actually go blind. And that really did terrify me. And there is a national screening program for diabetics being rolled out, but I just really wasn't prepared to wait. So I went private on that one, and to my astonishment and delight, I have to be honest, the consultant told me that if I wasn't sitting in front of him, my eyes could be those of a 15-year-old rather than a 50-year-old.
Right. Oh, terrific.
And I actually walked out of the clinic onto the street, and I actually burst into tears. I was just so relieved. I'm not, you know, health doesn't bother me. When the diabetes was, you know, I took it in my stride. I said, OK, it's a challenge. I have to deal with it. But the one thing that really would terrify me is eyesight, because there's no coming back when you lose it. It's not like, you know, and I don't mean to belittle any other condition, but it's not like, you know, maybe heart disease or cancer where you have a fighting chance.
Yeah.
You know, your eyesight is gone. It's gone.
Yeah.
And so I was just so relieved, to be honest, that it wasn't affected me.
Yeah. What was your lifestyle like before?
Oh, God. I mean, hopeless in so many ways. Like, obviously, as a journalist, you tend not to work normal hours. I also, what has saved me, I think, in one sense, is I work from home. And whereas working from home previously was all about bad habits and endless grazing and opening the fridge and going up to the shop to buy the paper and coming back with two bars of chocolate. And then when you finish work at 7, 8 o'clock at night, opening the couple of cans of beer or the bottle of wine. And because I live alone, the bottle of wine is open. There is no leftover wine, basically.
Right.
So, you know, definitely drinking too much. Problem drinking, I suspect not. But, you know, problem health-wise, yes.
Yeah.
And also, just like not regular, no routine, which really doesn't help. And what I found now that the bonus of living at home is of working from home is I'm in total control of what I eat.
Yeah.
Whereas I fully accept that, you know, this sort of weight loss probably isn't possible for people who at lunchtime have to buy a made sandwich. I mean, I'm obsessed now about reading labels on food. And if there's more than certain quantities of sugars or I'm not so sure about the saturated fat thing, because I don't know, that's such a catch-all term. Some of them may be good for you, some of them may be bad for you. So I'm a bit wary of that. But I think it's difficult for people who actually eat out a lot. And I, you know, I'm obviously in my job, I go to receptions and dinners and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I do have to be quite disciplined about what I eat. But you usually can find something. I mean, it's amazing. You go to the poshest restaurant in the world. If you say, I can't eat your fantastic pastry creation, could I just have a piece of fruit? Instead, they will come out with the most magnificent fruit salad with nothing added, no syrup, because they know, you know. And the one thing I would say, since I was on the diet, I've been abroad many times to Canada and Turkey and France and Spain. And the one place I found it difficult to eat out is Ireland. Because I spent 8 days driving around the Wild Atlantic Way for
Lovely.
A feature that's coming up. It was magnificent.
Yeah.
But I just found it very difficult. Everything is a sandwich. And you just don't really know what's going into it. And I would just ask all restaurants, cafes, anybody who can, it must be the simplest thing in the world to offer whole wheat pasta as an option to white pasta. Is it so difficult to keep a sweet potato in the vegetable basket alongside ordinary potatoes? Because sweet potatoes release the sugar more slowly and they don't make you
spike.
Yeah,
but you hear what my new very best friend said.
No.
If you take butter with them.
Yeah, no, that's great. I know, I'm fascinated because I love a bit of mash especially. But, you know, brown rice, just offer alternatives. The one great thing about Ireland is no matter where you go, you get brown bread.
Yes.
And I heard Carl Henry on the radio one day and he said something very good. He said, you know, the more resistant the bread is when you squeeze it, the better it is for you. So now I squeeze bread everywhere, and if it kind of gives under pressure, it doesn't come
Forget
home with me.
Okay. And how's the diabetes now?
Well, the funny thing is, I had my first 3-month sugar test 2 weeks ago, and the sugars are measured in a thing called millimoles per mole. And well, I don't even know what that means, basically.
Right.
But the normal range, it should be between 20 and 42 for a normal healthy adult. Mine was 73. And when I went back for the 3-month test, mine is now down to 41. So
fantastic.
I'm back within. Yes, now I'm also on tablets. Unlike Mike, I didn't do it by diet alone. I'm on metformin, glucophage,
right.
People might know it as. But I've reduced that to 2 500 mils a day from 3, and I still seem to be doing okay. And I test my sugars, you know, I do the pinprick test every now and then. And
I tell you, you're looking well on it.
Thank you.
So maybe a diagnosis of diabetes was very good for you.
It probably is the best thing
wrong.
That ever happened.
Yeah, it
actually gave me the kick I needed.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay, Philip Nolan, listen, thank you very much indeed for that.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.